I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University.
And I'm John Blankenship from Vanderbilt University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network.
I always used to hear people say, I can't complain. Wouldn't do me any good if I did.
There you go.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly. So were you rolling? It sounds like you just put a tape in the tape deck.
Oh, yeah, I definitely did.
Is that how you edit it?
Yeah. Stick it in the tape deck, you know. You know, flip it over to side B when I need to.
You it's know. On an old reel-to-reel.
Yeah. Had to press that play button.
Old school right there.
Hey, when I was a kid, I used to actually do that kind of thing, you know?
How was everybody's Monday?
Wasn't bad.
It was a Monday.
What is going on at both of your schools? What is going on at Belmont, Logan?
Let's see here. Tomorrow we are hosting the first of two mayoral debates between the four top candidates. What other stuff are we doing? I think we're working on a few college websites right now, like colleges and, a bunch of other stuff.
What about Carson Newman?
Yeah, we have our summer session G check-in on Saturday, which is when all of our athletic teams take a course so that they can practice in the summer. So we were getting all those rosters right today.
All about the athletics.
Yeah. So we're getting all that right, and then we're implementing a housing software, but our API isn't working, and so that's been a huge pain in my rear today.
That's always a good time.
StarRes. It's like a occupancy management software.
That's cool.
Yeah. It will be if it will work eventually. So we'll get there. I still have hope.
What's that?
I think it'll be great when we get there. I still have hope that we will.
because you're still getting acclimated to all the stuff that's going on there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And once we get into it, I want to ask you about residence directors.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever been one?
I was a residence director for 5 years.
Okay. So at some colleges, and Belmont is one of them, and I think Vanderbilt is too, you can be married, have kids, mm-hmm. and still be a residence director, right?
Correct. I was married all 5 years that I was a residence director, and I had a kid for 4 of those 5 years.
At Belmont, did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not know that.
I was bold enough and young and dumb enough to bring my baby on my job interview with me to Belmont, and they still hired me. So.
Oh, my word. That's awesome.
Yeah. So props to Anthony Donovan for that.
Well, that says a lot about Belmont and Anthony Donovan right there. You know, that's...
It does.
That's one of the things that makes it special. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get too deep into Belmont... and you're past there. why don't you introduce yourself, tell our guests, you know, who you are, where you're from, and what you do at where you work.
Sure. So I'm Shanna Carmack. I am the Director of Residence Life at Carson Newman University in East Tennessee. And I'm from a very small town right outside of Memphis, Tennessee, called Covington.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, first of all, we like having old friends on the show. That's always great. John and I knew Shanna from her time at Belmont, and she has, you know, since moved on to other things and better opportunities at Carson Newman. We were sad to see you go, but super excited that you had such a great opportunity open up. Can you tell us a little bit kind of the operation there at Carson Newman? Like, how many residence halls do you have? How many, you know, residence directors, RAs, students, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So we have 6 residence halls. 5 are traditional residence halls and then an apartment complex. And those are overseen by 4 full-time employees, and 2 residence directors and 2 residence life coordinators. And then they oversee about 40 or so RAs, and I have about 800 or so on campus. And we have about 2,000 students, undergrad, and then more if you count in, you know, online learners and graduate students and things like that.
Sorry.
Long.
I was waiting
long
for
pause for
I was wait purposes. I was waiting for John to hop in with a question.
Did I lose you?
Nope.
No. Well, so I'll dive right in, because that's usually what I do. So,
which is why there was a long pause, because I was waiting for him to dive in.
I guess that's kind of my thing. So
I might have to leave that in the edit, because. Go ahead, John.
What are some of your day-to-day challenges? I've now worked in university marketing and now in development and alumni relations marketing, but I haven't had a ton of experience in student affairs. So your role now, take us through what your day-to-day operations are.
Sure. So part of the reason that I love residence life is that I get to sort of be a generalist. I get to have my hands in a lot of different things, and so no 2 days really ever look the same. Some days I am working on facility improvements and thinking about renovating bathrooms and painting hallways and buying furniture, and other days I'm working on occupancy management, room assignments, making sure billing is correct, and I do a lot of supervision. And thinking about how to recruit, retain, and supervise professional staff members and student staff members, providing a really wonderful, inclusive, growing environment for students to live in and how we prepare for that, assessing that, thinking about other ways to assess it. You know, do our students who live on campus have higher GPAs? Are they more likely to graduate in 4 years? Are they more likely to give back to the institution as an alumni if they have lived on campus? And so, and then we also, you know, deal with students who have made poor choices and helping educate them on better ways to make choices in the future when they live in community with other people.
Exactly. That's the best reaction you can have.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you have some stories.
Oh yeah.
Heck, I have stories from when I was in res life back in the day.
Yeah, I don't think you could be in residence life very long without having stories.
Well, that has to be one of the things that keep you going, though. I mean, when you talked about that, you're not the first person that I've heard say about their career that they like being a generalist, because you get to do so many different things. I think that's a good perspective to have. I think some people enjoy having the same thing to do every day, but I kind of lean toward, I need to mix it up, you know.
Just about the time that I get tired of doing one thing, it's time to kind of switch my gears and go on to something else. It's a new season in residence life, and so I really appreciate that.
So, and you mentioned too, close to the end of what you were saying about your day-to-day responsibilities, about educating the students on giving back.
Well, educating the students on living in community And then a part of my sort of ongoing assessment is what does living on campus sort of do for the institution?
Right.
And one of the things that I've been looking at and trying to assess is, are students more likely to give back to the institution as an alumni if they've lived on campus?
That's very interesting. Are you taking that on, or?
Well, I'm trying to. Mining the data is complicated. But
I would imagine so.
Yeah, especially when you, what universities are you looking at? I mean, just Carson Newman or?
Just Carson Newman. Yeah, I'm not doing a dissertation or anything. This is just like purely I'm interested in it at Carson Newman.
You know, that would be a really good dissertation.
I mean, it might turn into that one day, like many, many years in the future.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you why now, having lived in that world for a couple of years, mm-hmm. that's a very interesting question, because I think there are so many variables that encourage giving among student bodies. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could talk about it here for an hour and not even touch the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
there's living on campus, you know, does that lead more to it? You know, I generally speaking, wouldn't you think so? Because, you know, I went to a college that you could drive back and forth to, and I probably don't have the same connection with my university mm-hmm. as I would if I had lived there for all 4 years.
Sure. I mean, anecdotally, I think that that's correct. I think that living on campus gives you this sense of home. And we're all, you know, we're all in this together. This is our place to take care of and contribute to. But I also have to, like, recognize that I was that person that lived on campus, and I am friends with those people who live on campus, and I don't really hear the other side of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's all anecdotal. I don't know. I don't have evidence to prove that yet.
Mm-hmm. Does mostly everybody at Carson Newman live on campus?
So we have a residency requirement that you have to live on campus until your senior year. So until you're 22 or you have 90 credit hours. But the catch is that you could also live at home with your parents if you live in a 50-mile radius. And so about 37% of our incoming freshman class is going to live at home with their
parents. Oh, wow.
Because
okay.
we're a really regional institution. So we have a really high residency requirement, but we also have a lot of really local students.
Right. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, you know, again, anecdotally, I don't have any research to support this, but it seems like universities over the last several years, at least, have gone to requiring a certain amount of time you have to live on campus, you know, a certain amount of time you can't have a car on campus.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a reason, you know. People, there are better resolutions for students who live on campus.
Yeah.
And that's becoming more and more apparent as time goes by. And the same goes for meal plans. Students who have access to food and what was it, 14 meals a week or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Markedly do better than students who live off campus and fend for themselves. And that's in the research. It's I know a lot of students think that universities
mm-hmm.
do it just to make money, but there's a reason behind it, and that's
yeah.
that's one of them.
I was just gonna say, I think a lot of the knee jerk reaction, it's just that, it's knee jerk reaction without hearing the research backing up why universities are doing it. That you'll have one less thing to worry about. You can focus more on your studies. You know. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Well, and as a administrator, I know that if my student is living on campus and has a meal plan, then that student has two less things to worry about. You know, they're not going to be homeless, and they're going to have food for that day, and they don't,
exactly.
they don't have to worry about that.
Exactly. Because I can remember being a student juggling work and mm-hmm. making sure that you took time to eat and going to class, you know.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
How did you get into residence life? Like, sure. What's the whole story behind that?
Sure. So, like I mentioned earlier, I grew up in West Tennessee, and I'm a first-generation college student, and my parents always told me that if I was going to college, I had to figure out a way to pay for it. And so my entire goal in going to college was to get away from the little town that I grew up in. And so I took the Tennessee Lottery Scholarship and figured out that King College, or it's now King University, was 800 miles away from home and still worked with the Tennessee Lottery Scholarship. So it's on the other tippy top end of Tennessee. And maybe not the best way to choose a college, but it worked out for me. And I ended up in this tiny little private liberal arts Presbyterian college of about 500 students. Like, it was very tiny. And it was just this wonderful experience of being able to be involved in absolutely everything. And I was in a bunch of clubs and organizations and student government, and I was an RA. And I wanted to go be an optometrist until I hit organic chemistry and had an internship and discovered that I hated that. And so, you know, I had a little life crisis there. And the advisor for student government actually said, well, why don't you do student affairs? You're pretty good at this. And it was sort of that light bulb moment of, oh, I could do that. And I actually didn't really like being an RA. It was not my favorite. So I thought I was going to go into student affairs and do student activities or advising or something along those lines. And my husband and I were engaged at the time. We got married right out of college, as young people tend to do at Christian colleges. And so we both decided to apply to all of the SEC schools to have a different experience for grad school. And we both got into Ole Miss together, and then we both had funding at Ole Miss. And so that's, we decided to go down there. And it turns out that the only graduate assistantship that I was offered was to be a residence director. And so I thought, well, I'll do this for 2 years. It's free housing and it'll be worth it. And so I got down there and I was a residence director for the International Residence Hall. And I supervised, I started with 3 RAs. I ended up with 6 RAs because they kept putting students in the building. And it was just wonderful. I had incredible mentors. I loved the field. I fell in love with residence life. And it turned out to be this incredible experience. And so that's sort of when I decided I wanted to stay in res life. And then I was lucky enough to come to Belmont, and it just cemented my passion for residence life even more.
Well, I can tell in your voice how much you like it, or how much you love it, I should say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do.
I mean, that true or false, that has to be pretty stressful of a job.
It can be, particularly if you're working with a high needs population that is understaffed a little bit, then, you know, your phone can ring a lot, and it can get to the point. I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son, and it got to the point where my daughter, every time my phone rings, I answer it because it could be res life. And she'll say, it's just mommy, her kids need her. So,
that's pretty cute.
You know, it comes and goes, the stress of it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And you know, you're able to handle it and move on. You know, that's also a good trait to have.
Yeah.
You got to disconnect or detach sometimes, because it can be a lot. My wife Marin is now in student affairs, and it's, you know, it's a lot sometimes.
It is, for sure. You have to learn to, like you said, detach, or you have to take care of yourselves. You know, you have to take your personal days. You have to turn your phone off. You have to realize that somebody else can do your job. It's a job.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people can do that. Some people cannot. I'm one of those that cannot. I can't. Like, some people are able to just, you know, at 5 o'clock or whenever, you know, leave it at work but it's just so hard for whatever reason.
And that's why you shouldn't be in student affairs.
Oh, I know, I know. I hearing stories from friends and colleagues that I've known throughout the years, you know, I just, you know, some of the things that you hear are just, you know, heartbreaking, but, you know, some of them are, you know, really great touching success stories too. So, you know, I guess in the end it all balances out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
So I do want to know, what was it like living with a little one when you were a residence director?
Yeah. So, my husband and I were not planning on having kids, but I, started taking
surprise,
you know, to be healthy, and turns out I'm a little bit allergic to fish oil. So I started throwing up my multivitamins every morning, which, you know, means you also throw up your birth control. So then we got this cute little bundle of surprise, my second year of graduate school. So I handed in my higher ed law final and went to the hospital and had a baby and had Christmas break, and then went back to my last semester of grad school in January.
Oh my goodness.
And my forever mentor, the executive director of housing at Ole Miss, Lorinda Kerhut, she is retired now and she's so incredible. I went to her and said, we are having a baby and I know I don't have a maternity leave. And I thought she was going to fire me because I didn't know that you could have a baby in residence life. Nobody else was even married in residence life. And, you know, she showed me nothing but love, encouragement, and support. She took a room offline in the residence hall and knocked down a wall so that the baby could have her own room.
Oh, wow.
Which is unheard of. Like, nobody does that.
Go ahead.
Oh, she is so incredible. I could go on and on and on about Lorinda. But so we had the baby, and, you know, when you're a residence director living in a hall of freshmen, you don't really get to sleep anyways. And so, you know, adding a baby in the mix was fine. I would not necessarily recommend it, but
if you're already up, you know,
yeah,
handle the situation.
You're already up. They're being loud in the hallway. You just walk out with the baby. They quiet down. It's okay.
So you're saying you used your baby to quiet your residents? Is that what you're saying?
I would quiet the residents with her. She was program bait. So if we were having an event, the baby would be there, you know, so like come learn about finals and studying. You can see the baby, you know. So she's great. When we moved off campus, she was 3 and a half and she had no concept of the fact that she couldn't just go to the neighbor's house and knock on the door, because she would just go up and down the hallway knocking on the doors. They were all her friends.
And oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So we had to have some stranger danger conversations, but you know, it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to have a child in a residence hall, but it's doable. And particularly if you're caught off guard sort of with it, it's okay. You can manage it. It's totally fine. My husband is the most supportive person, you know, and so we had to manage, hey, I'm on call. I may need to leave if I get a call in the middle of the night, so I need you to be here, you know. Yeah. But it worked out.
What did you say your mentor's name was?
Her name is Lorinda Kerhut.
Okay. All right. So I know she's an important person to you, and that's being a mentor. Like, that whole subject is something that's fascinating to me, and I think it is for a lot of people out there, especially in higher ed. Mm-hmm. Talk about what having her as your mentor meant to you.
Yeah. I think I have two really important mentors. Lorinda is sort of the first one. And she, you know, she came up in student affairs at a time where there weren't a lot of women in leadership, particularly in Mississippi, in leadership at state institutions. And she's a powerhouse. She founded the Southern Placement Exchange, which was a job exchange for local regional jobs in student affairs and residence life. And she just poured into us as graduate students and even her undergraduates as RAs, where, you know, she didn't have time to do that. She was running a huge department with multi-million dollar budget, you know, working for Ole Miss, and she had us over to her house. She talked to us about her family. She talked to us about our families. She was never flustered, you know, with concerns or problems. She was always level-headed. And I think I watched her do that, and it was just really, really inspiring to me for her to be that way. She, in grad school, so 10 years ago, I told Lorinda that I wanted to be, we were leaving, and she said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, well, I want to be a WOHO, which is this organization that she's created within our housing organization for women who are chief housing officers. And they all get together at the annual conference and get to just kind of talk about being a woman in leadership. And this year, when I became a director of Residence Life, she, out of retirement, you know, called me, congratulated me, and invited me to join the WOHOs at our annual conference.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's incredible that she would even remember that.
Yeah, that is a great story. That's the kind of impact that you want to have on people.
Yeah,
you know.
So you just started recently there at Carson Newman. What has your first year been like?
It has been a year full of transition and challenges, a lot of learning, a lot of patience. I'm a very, very impatient person. And so it's been interesting. I've tried to sort of sit back and watch and learn the culture. It's a very, very different culture from Belmont. And I don't want to come in and just change everything. There were a few things that I was like, nope, we have to do this right now. I cannot wait a year. but I wanted to come in, and I have four professional staff members who, they all went to Carson Newman as students, and they've all been working at Carson Newman longer than I have. And so I really wanted to learn from them. They are incredible people. And so, you know, it's an interesting mix to supervise people who are teaching you to do your job, you know? So, but it's been good. It's been a really, really good year. It's been over and over again, I've been confirmed that I made the right decision.
That's awesome.
That's always a good feeling.
Yes.
You don't want the first year to go by and go, what were we thinking?
Why did we do this?
Why did we move over here? You know?
Exactly.
Well, you know, you've been doing a lot of listening too, and that's important, especially to the people that have already been there or that have been there for a while, you know? Makes them, you know, feel like, you know, you're there to listen and improve, not just come in and change everything, you know?
Exactly. I did their job for 5 years, but I don't do their job now. And I never did their job at Carson Newman, right? You know?
And that's really awesome of you.
Yeah. And what's the rule? Like, whenever you start a new job, there's like this amount of time that you're able to, you know, it's kind of like a grace period. When you're first starting a job, you get about a year to 18 month of, you know, a honeymoon phase. Okay. And then after that, you know, all bets are off. Now it's on, you know, so you're still in that comfy window.
Yeah. Let's hope for 18 months. That one sounds good.
I tell myself the same thing. But anyway, it takes a while, especially when you're making a transition like that, because the last thing that you want to do is come in, create this feeling of uneasiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some of the things that you've done to help people feel more at ease? You know, have you done a listening tour? You know, do you do retreats?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Very early last summer, right when I started, we had a summer checkout, and it was pretty it's pretty common in residence life that when you check out the student, you close the door and you lock it so that the room is secure. And it was a busy day and it was hot and everything was kind of going wrong anyways. And so one of my staff members asked me 3 times, "Are you sure you want us to shut and lock the door?" "Yeah, shut and lock the doors." And then about a day later, I got a call that the building had molded because the airflow wasn't working because the doors were shut. And so at that point, I went back to the staff member and I could tell something was bothering her, but I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know her well enough to be like, "Wait, something is bothering you. What is going on?" You know? And so we were able to have a really good conversation and me just assuring her, like, if I'm wrong, just tell me that I'm wrong. It's okay. And we may disagree and I may ultimately ask you to do it anyways, but just tell me what's going on so that we are all on the same page. I trust you, you know, and that conversation did a world of difference for us. And, you know, from there, I think everything just kind of fell into place with them. The students at Carson Newman are incredible and so honest and kind with their honesty, which you don't get a lot with students. So I appreciate that. You usually get honest, but it's not always kindness with the honesty.
Brutal honesty.
Yeah, brutal honesty. I've been blessed not to get very much of that. But this year I did exit interviews with my RAs who were leaving the position because they were graduating or doing something else next year and didn't want to return to the position. And it was optional. They could opt in if they wanted to or not. And I got some really, really great feedback from that, just making that 20-minute space for them to come in and answer questions or tell me whatever they wanted to tell me. And that was really, really good.
I guess we come to our last question for you.
Oh, okay.
So if there's one thing that you want folks who listen to the show, the audience, folks who work in higher ed, if there's one thing you want them to know that's like really important about what you do, tell us what that is. Tell them what it is.
It's a very broad question, Logan.
It is.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about place lately.
Mm-hmm.
and connecting to your place and your community. I work in residence life, so I think about community a lot and how to build that community and how to grow your community, which we're pretty good about teaching our students who live in a residence hall to do, but we're pretty bad about doing as professionals in student affairs, I've noticed, of, you know, building our community outside of our jobs. And so I would say, you know, my advice would be think about your place and your community and how you connect into it and ways that you can do that. I think that loving and supporting each other, especially at this time, in our world is really, really important. Finding your people and those people that you can really count on no matter what.
Awesome.
That's a great thought to end on, because I think finding your place in the community is something that's really on the minds of a lot of people these days.
Mm-hmm. It should be.
Yeah.
Shanna, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks, guys.
Shanna, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it.
It was good talking to you again.
Loved catching up. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, head down to highered.social and get links to the stuff we talked about today, and subscribe to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps people find us and lets us know what you think of the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. We love talking to you. And don't forget to let us know if you want to be on the show. Higher Ed Social is produced by the amazing Emma Haas and is part of the Connect EDU Network, the first podcast network for higher education. Visit our website, connectedu.network, and subscribe to some awesome shows no matter where you work on campus. Thanks, and have a great week.